Model Test 7.
Section A. Mini Lecture.
In this section, you will hear a mini lecture. You will hear the mini lecture once only. While listening to the mini lecture, please complete the gap-filling task with no more than 3 words for each gap. Make sure the word or words you fill in is or are both grammatically and semantically acceptable. You may use the blank sheet for note-taking. You have 30 seconds to preview the gap-filling task. Now, listen to the mini-lecture. When it is over, you will be given 3 minutes to check your work.
Good morning, everyone. Today our topic will be focused on the American educational system. International students who come to the United States may wonder about their American classmates' prior education. Due to its local variations, the American education system appears confusing. In addition, the structure and procedures at American universities differ somewhat from other systems, such as the British model. This is a brief overview of the American school and university systems. To begin with, because the country has a federal system of government that has historically valued local governance, no country-level education system or curriculum exists in the United States. The federal government does not operate public schools. Each of the 50 states has its own Department of Education that sets guidelines for the schools of that state. Public schools also receive some funding from the state, although much of the funding comes from local property taxes. Public colleges and universities receive funding from the state in which they are located. Each state's legislative body decides how many tax dollars will be given to public colleges and universities. Students in grades 1 through 12 do not pay tuition. College and university students do pay tuition, but many earn scholarships or receive loans. Much of the control of American public schools lies in the hands of each local school district. Each school district is governed by a school board, a small committee of people elected by the local community or appointed by the local government. The school board sets general policies for the school district and ensures that state guidelines are met. Generally, school districts are divided into elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools. Elementary schools are composed of students in kindergarten and grades 1 through 6. Many children attend kindergarten when they are 5 years old. Children begin first grade at age 6. Middle school is composed of students in grades 6 through 8, and high school contains grades 9 through 12. High school students are required to take a wide variety of courses in English, mathematics, science, and social science. They may also be required to take foreign language or physical education, and they may elect to take music or art courses. Many high schools also offer vocational training courses. A course can be 1 semester or 2 semesters in length. The academic year generally begins in late August and ends in early June. In the United States, education is compulsory for all students until age 16. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, 85% of students graduate from high school. Most high school students graduate at the age of 17 or 18 years old. A student graduates after he or she has successfully passed all of the required courses. Grades are given to students for each course at the end of each semester. The grading scale is A, excellent, B, above average, C, average, D, below average, and F, failing. A student who fails a required course must take the course again. In 1970, about half of all American students who graduated from high school went to community college or university. Today, nearly 3 out of 4 American high school graduates go to college or university. Students have the option of attending a 2-year community college, also known as a junior college, before applying to a 4-year university. Admission to community college is easier, tuition is lower, and class sizes are often smaller than those in a university. Community college students can earn an associate's degree and transfer course credits to a university. As to admission to a university, although admission policies vary from one university to the next, most determine admission based on several criteria, including a student's high school course of study, high school GPA, SAT, or ACT exam scores, written essay, and possibly a personal interview. Universities often require students to write an essay as part of the application process. The length and content of the essay is determined by each admission office. The applicant also may be required to have a personal interview with a representative from the admissions office. After applicants have successfully been enrolled, they may receive a liberal education in most of the universities, which means students are required to take courses across several disciplines before they specialize in a major field of study. Graduate and professional, such as medicine or law, programs are specialized. At the university level, most courses are only one semester long. Each course is assigned a number of credit hours. Credit hours are usually based on how much time is spent in class. Most courses are 3 credits. However, some courses may be 1, 2, 4, or 5 credits. All degree programs require students to complete a minimum number of credit hours before graduation. Most bachelor degree programs in the United States do not require students to write a final thesis. Selection for admission to a graduate program is based on several criteria. These include completion of a bachelor's degree, the student's undergraduate coursework, and their GPA. Students are also expected to write an essay as part of their application or submit a writing sample. Most master's programs require students to have a minimum score on GRE, which tests verbal, quantitative, and analytical writing skills. If students continue to take courses at the graduate level, a final thesis is required for most master's programs. Doctoral students take courses until they have earned enough credit hours to attempt their qualifying examinations, which are usually taken over several days and often include both a written and oral component. After doctoral students pass their qualifying exams, they are advanced to candidacy and can begin writing their dissertations. Before the degree is given, the completed dissertation must be orally defended before the candidate's faculty committee. To conclude my lecture, we can say that the American educational system has its unique characteristics. First, there is no country-level education system or curriculum that exists in the United States. Actually, most of the control of American public schools lies in the hands of local school districts, which can be divided into elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools. Besides, in the United States, education is compulsory for all students until age 16. Finally, we also talked about the admission requirements and the credit hour system of the undergraduate as well as graduate program in American universities.
Now, you have 3 minutes to check your work. This is the end of Section A mini lecture.
Section B, interview.
In this section, you will hear one interview. The interview will be divided into two parts. At the end of each part, five questions will be asked about what was said. Both the interview and the questions will be spoken once only. After each question, there will be a 10-second pause. During the pause, you should read the four choices of A, B, C, and D, and mark the best answer to each question. You have 30 seconds to preview the questions. Now, listen to part one of the interview.
Hello, everyone. Today we're greatly honored to have Mr. Malcolm, an expert on education in Australia, to tell us some precautions overseas students should take when studying there. Well, Mr. Malcolm.
Thank you, Alexandra.
You know, Mr. Malcolm, there are more and more overseas students who apply for further study in Australia. What should they pay most attention to?
Well, money, of course. In the mid-1990s, it is estimated that a student living alone requires an average of $12,000 in living expenses for each year of study. Of course, those costs increase with time.
Then what about shared accommodation on campus? Is it cheaper?
Well, this kind of accommodation requires an average of $10,000 per year, but it may not be suitable for all. I think it is preferable for overseas students whose English is in need of practice to take advantage of live-in situations with native speakers wherever possible. However, sharing with friends who are easy to communicate with is probably more sensible at first, and also it can save money.
Then how about transportation? Should students buy a car when they arrive there?
Well, owning and maintaining a motor vehicle is quite expensive in Australia. Insurance is compulsory and costly, and parking both on and off campus can be a problem, requiring additional expense. Therefore, it is not advisable for a student to hold a car unless it is absolutely necessary. Even second-hand cars are quite expensive, and they can cost in excess of $4,000.
Then how can students go to school without a car?
Well, most educational institutions are serviced by reliable public transport. The university and college campuses within the major cities are well served by public buses. In addition, the larger cities have extensive subway systems. For example, in Sydney, most college and university campuses are only 10 or 20 minutes from a rail station.
That sounds reasonable. Then let's come to study necessities. I mean textbooks and stationery items. How much do they cost per year?
Well, I don't think students should rush into buying expensive textbooks. It is advisable to wait until your first lectures and tutorial, and then ask academic staff which are the essential purchases. There is usually a second-hand bookshop on campus, and used books are also advertised on faculty notice boards. As for stationery, the Students' Union coordinates a number of outlets on the various university campuses that provide stationery items and other essential study equipment at reasonable prices. Some courses require specialized equipment, which can be quite costly, and it is wise to check any additional costs involved with the course of your choice. In general, those practically oriented courses tend to incur higher additional costs. Expenses for books, stationery and equipment vary greatly, but you should allow approximately $500 to $1,000 a year.
Oh, I see. Students really have to prepare a lot of money. But can they have part-time jobs during study so that they can ease the tension?
Well, under present immigration regulations, international students are allowed to work up to 20 hours during term time and full-time during vacation.
This is the end of part one of the interview. Questions 1 to 5 are based on what you have just heard.
Question 1. How much was estimated living cost each year in Australia in the mid-1990s?
Question 2. What is the benefit of living in shared accommodation on campus?
Question 3. What transportation students are suggested to take while studying in Sydney, according to Mr. Malcolm's suggestion?
Question 4. According to Mr. Malcolm, how can overseas students get textbooks?
Question 5. How many hours international students are allowed to work during school time?
Now, listen to part 2 of the interview.
However, it is impossible for students to expect to earn sufficient funds working part-time to pay for tuition fees and living costs. While some students are able to supplement their funds with money from part-time and vacation work, such work is not always regular, even when available, and this can contribute to anxiety and study problems.
Then how can students find part-time jobs or vacation work?
They can always contact the Commonwealth Employment Service or the Students' Union on campus. However, they should be fully aware that part-time jobs and vacation work have become more difficult to find nowadays.
That means it's better for students to prepare enough fund beforehand, for they cannot always count on part-time jobs or vacation work.
Well, that's true. One more thing I have to clarify is the difference between the academic year and the calendar year. All the above costs are only within the scope of academic year. The summer vacation, however, requires special financial planning. University eating facilities and some university and college housing facilities close during this time. As a general rule, international students should expect to spend at least as much during the summer as they do during the academic year.
That's a large figure. Thank you very much for your valuable information, Mr. Malcolm.
You're welcome.
This is the end of part 2 of the interview. Questions 6 to 10 are based on what you have just heard. Question 6. What does Mr. Malcolm think about part-time jobs?
Question 7. Who students can contact to find part-time job?
Question 8. Which period needs special financing planning?
Question 9. What is this interview mainly talking about?
Question 10. According to the interview, what is probably the total living expense per year for overseas students studying in Australia?